it's time to meet up and catch up at the Weekend Water Cooler. Now, here's your host, Gene Bolduc.
And welcome to the Weekend Water Cooler at Home Edition. We are joined, thankfully, I'm so lucky, Penny, that you do this all the time. Every time I ask, our good friend Penny Rich, great friend of the show and chair of the Orange County Commissioners, has joined us for the 11th millionth time. You know, by the way, after Penny is done being, after she retires from being chairman of the Orange County Commissioners, I think she's going to be co-host of this show. I haven't formally asked her, but I'm not sure why it wouldn't be the water cooler with Gene and Penny. Because, you know, coolers, think about it. Think of what a water cooler represents, you know, gossip, who's up, who's down. This is our job, right?
Sure thing. And it's always my pleasure when you call. I'm like, okay, how do we fit this in? Let's fit this in the week, you know.
So
I'm
gotta do it.
I'm always happy.
Well, I thank you as usual. So what's shaking with the Orange County Commissioners? Nothing much going on, pretty lazy, summertime.
Yeah, not much at all. As a matter of fact, you know, I'm just kind of sleeping most of the time.
Most of the days, right?
Yeah, just sleeping.
Eating
away.
Chocolate.
Right,
sleeping.
Right. So, you know, of course, we're in this crazy pandemic. And right now, the major focus, I guess, with folks is that UNC is actually going to open next week on Monday. So I know you broadcast on the weekend. The very next day, Monday, is supposedly when some in-person classes begin. Now, keep in mind, some in-person classes have already started. Graduate programs have already started. I know the School of Pharmacy has already brought some students in. So, they're rolling, and we keep getting emails from very, very concerned residents. So that's been the highlight of this week.
Yeah. You know, I know lots of people on my Facebook feed are saying, you know, the students are back, and I'm not coming out of my house until Thanksgiving. You know, it's just because, I mean, they're my age, you know, they're old, in other words, and they're worried. I mean, they're concerned about the uptick in just the amount of virus that's going to be floating around in the community. It's when it, you know, if, and it's not any disparaging thing about students or how they behave. It's about, you know, when you introduce 30,000 or 40,000 people, new people from all over the country into the population, generally, right. You know, that's a problem. But especially if they're congregating in an enclosed space. I mean,
it's valid. That's valid, Gina. And I appreciate what you just said, that, you know, we don't want to. We want the students here. I mean, Chapel Hill can't survive without students here.
And we wouldn't want to.
We wouldn't want to. I mean, we love the diversity. We love the education. We love what the students bring here. I think because the university is not shutting the doors right now, or at the beginning anyway, I think what you just said makes a lot of sense, is everybody has to give everyone else space. So if you don't need to be downtown near campus, you shouldn't go there. You should not go there. You should figure out if, you know, the Harris Teeter downtown or something is the place where you shop, figure out a different place to go until we get through this. I do think we're going to become a hotspot. I don't think that the university is going to be able to maintain in-person classes.
I feel exactly the same way. I mean, I think that it's, you know, I don't like, and I really, really can't stand this idea, K-12, but I'm also not crazy about this being an experiment. I can tell you that if it were one of my children, you know, my answer would be a big fat no about them going and attending in-person classes. I would just say, look, you know, you didn't plan for this to be the year that you were taking off from school to discover your inner child or whatever. But it's turning out that this is going to be the year, and it's a bummer, but, you know, it's more important that you be alive to finish and that you not have, you know, a terrible experience of going to school, having to leave, being sick. It's just, there are so many bricks in the wall of it's not worth it.
It's
subjective.
Too.
I mean, it's subjective. Yeah. People have different feelings about this, and I have underlying conditions, and so I have that extra layer of caution that some parents don't. The other thing I would say is, I saw a statement that was issued by the Orange County Health Department that I really appreciated, that they were kind of taking a lead on this and saying, look, here are some things, here are some recommendations. We're the health department. This is a health issue. Here are our recommendations to the university. The university is going to do whatever the university is going to do with that. But I appreciate them providing that guidance and, and making it public. I mean, I think that we're all, this always comes back to, as a community, we are absolutely all in this in equal proportions, because it requires all of us to cooperate to make this work and to operate with some safety. I'm a person, I'll give you one example. When this first started really going gangbusters in late March, early April, man, it made me really uncomfortable and depressed to go to the grocery store, a simple everyday activity. And part of it was about part of it was just the social discomfort of wearing a mask and feeling uncomfortable with people who are not my family getting within 6 feet of me unintentionally or otherwise. I'm not a person who is naturally mistrustful of people around me. I engage socially with strangers all the time. I'm the person who's talking in the elevator. Not that I would be on an elevator right
now.
Not
right now.
The way that that kind of shut me down in that experience made me uncomfortable. On top of that was walking along the aisles in the store and seeing gigantic gaps where there are empty shelves made me feel like I was, you know, in Russia in bad times, you know, shortages, you know, make you really nervous. Like, what is going to happen with the supply chain? And anybody who would say it's going to be this way or it's going to be that way is just full of it, because how could you possibly know? You can't know. I feel much more comfortable with that now. Everything in that experience for me has been fairly normalized, including if there's a person in a wheelchair or otherwise a senior having difficulty reaching something on the shelf and whatever. Now I do what I always do, but without discomfort. I say, may I help? Can I get this for you? I mean, I need their permission first to kind of get into their space. But I don't feel any reluctance about doing that. I'm wearing a mask, they're wearing a mask. And the issue of surfaces, we're not worried about so much anymore. So I can see the kind of continuum of how things can get normalized and we can feel safer in situations. But one of the situations that I just don't see how it can be made so safe that it feels normal is having 25 people in a room together.
No.
I just don't see how that is going to work without.
It's not going to work. And I think you're making a lot of really good points. And one of the reasons that I collaborate with the mayors at least once a week, maybe two or three times a week, is to discuss exactly what you're saying about these 25 people. I mean, right now it's 10 people inside. It's not 25. And so if you have your regular
Penny,
meeting,
Penny, how are you doing that in the classroom?
You can't. Well, because they are actually, did you hear that? they are exempt. Education is exempt. So they don't have to follow those rules. But here's the thing, Jean, you know, we think about moving forward, maybe with meetings and having meetings. If there's seven people on your board, that means there's only three more people that can be in that space.
Right.
It doesn't work. It doesn't work. So we're going to have to think about meeting or talking like you and I are now on Zoom until the end of the year. Because you know what? What you just talked about of how you kind of normalized the gaps on the shelves, how you normalized how you talk to people now that you have the mask on. You know, how UNC students are coming back, how are we going to co-live with these students? because the university is going to open. They may close. That doesn't mean all the students are going to leave, because the students that are on off-campus housing may not leave.
They probably have a lease for a year.
They might stay here. So we need to know how we're going to, you know, live collectively, as opposed to consistently say no, 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 because the no is not working. So let's move on past no. Let's figure out what pieces of that puzzle can fit together and come up with a solution. And you know, really, yeah.
You know, yeah. Penny, Rich, and I are going to come back in just a moment, and we're going to tell you what all those answers are, because it's just so easy to figure out.
We got this. We got this.
We got this. And you're listening to the Weekend Water Cooler on 97.9 The Hill. Please don't go away. We're going to be right back with all the solutions to every problem in the world. We'll be right back. And we're back with Penny Rich. We're just talking about the Orange County Health Department giving guidance to the community, to the university specifically, about reopening. I assume, I didn't read it closely. Does it also apply K-12? Or is it directed right at UNC, right?
Yeah, this one was directed to the chancellor. And I know you brought up K-12 in the last segment, which I think is really important, Gene, to hit on. Just briefly before we go back to the health department, is that in Chapel Hill, Carrboro City School Systems, they're not going to open up in-person classes until January. So they made that decision. But, you know, they put the caveat in there that if things do change and the cases start going down, we can open up. Orange County's a little bit different. They're on the 9-week delay right now still. And you know, they're waiting to make those decisions. Different groups of people in Orange County versus Chapel Hill City Schools.
Slightly different considerations, right.
Right. And, you know, down here in Chapel Hill, you know, you have people creating these pods and they're, you know, they're paying a fortune for tutors and they can afford it. They can do it. Orange County residents out in the county aren't as fortunate as some of the folks down here. And they not only do they not have internet service, which is a whole nother show, Gene.
You got it. You're exactly right.
Yeah. They don't have the kind of disposable income to hire education professionals to come in and teach their kids in pods. So this letter from the health director, and we'll get back to your original question, was directed at the chancellor, and it came with some recommendations. But I just want to talk about the health director in Orange County and every county in North Carolina. So the health director is appointed by the manager, hired by the manager. And then the Board of County Commissioners appoints the board of directors for the health director. She has to respond and answer to her board of directors. She does not answer to elected officials. She does not answer to the Board of County Commissioners. She answers to her board of directors and the state. Okay. Right. So when people are saying, well, we should get the health director to write this and write that and write that, you can't do that as an elected official. Tell the health director what to do as far as what her recommendations are. That is not appropriate. What you can do is have a really good relationship with your health director, which we do have. She has been spot on. She has been solid. She is very knowledgeable. And I would not want anyone else in charge right now in Orange County but Quintana Stewart. And so I just want people to understand out there that she is not influenced by politics or what elected officials are saying. She is influenced by science and takes that science and applies it to what her recommendations will be. And that's what she sent to the chancellor.
And that structure exists precisely for that protection, correct? So that her job is not politicized.
Right. That's exactly right.
Same thing with the FBI director, has a 10-year appointment so that he or she doesn't ebb and flow with who's in, who's out politically. That's the design, is that you're the top law enforcement person in the country and you should be not a politician. And so, you know,
exactly. And also, I know that's really smart.
People are totally holding your head.
People don't see you on the radio holding your head, but you know, it's really important. Not only the influence, but you know, you need to take some of the emotion out of these decisions. These are hard decisions. They've been hard since the end of January when we knew we were heading in this direction. And so, you know, Quintana Stewart is someone that is really very, very good at this. She's listening to elected officials that are very emotionally concerned. We're constantly hearing from our constituents. We're hearing from residents. We're hearing from professors. We're hearing from the housekeepers. She has to navigate through all of that and come up and still think about, what does the science say? What are the experts telling me? What is going to happen? And she's done that. And so she sent her recommendations to the chancellor. I'm assuming that the chancellor will not be able to abide by some of her recommendations, because as much as people think that he might have the last say, I don't think he does. I think it's the board of governors, the board of trustees, and of course the General Assembly, who is not really, interested in hearing from the public right now. So
you tell me that that somewhere along the chain of command is the General Assembly, and that's where I start wanting to cry.
I know. Or you can hold your head again, because, you think about education in general right now. We need a General Assembly that is going to get on board with, how are we going to educate our kids? How are we going to deliver a sound basic education? If we don't have funding, how are we going to do this? They have offered nothing.
And at the risk of nationalizing absolutely everything, I will tell you that this reminds me so much of Trump and why it is that he's such a poor leader. And I really mean this in a very specific way, is that his answer to almost everything is, this is how we used to do it, and that's just fine. We have to get back to that. He started his whole campaign with let's make America great again. And there are plenty of constituencies that I need not articulate who look at that and say, well, let's see, I guess he's talking about the 50s, and I don't think the 50s were so great. They weren't so great. You know, you and I, Penny, not only were, barely here, you weren't here in the 50s. I was here just barely in the 50s, but growing up, and until just before I got married, women couldn't have a checking account without their husband's permission. So there's a whole bunch of things from way back when that were so great for Donald Trump that were not great for African Americans, for women, for any number of, no matter how you slice the pie and come up with people who are not white males,
right,
and born rich. Well, maybe you were born rich, but the other way. Oh man, this is only the 2 millionth time you've heard that reference.
Right.
And even approaching this, what does he do? He tweets every other day. We got to open the schools. Got to open the schools. Because the schools have to open because they've been open before. And that's, he is not a guy who can take a situation that's complicated and dangerous and say, okay, we have to look at a universe of what we can do. This is a different universe than what it used to be. And we're going to have to really imagine ways of getting the same thing done in a very different way. The K-12 schools have this gigantic issue of transportation to do that safely. And in Orange County, I mean, holy mackerel, if you can't run buses, you're going to run 3 rounds of bus trips to get kids to school? I don't see how you can possibly do that.
It's going to be a challenge, right?
And it would cost a fortune.
Well, like you're saying, people that are listening on the radio from Chapel Hill and Carrboro don't understand that Orange County is a rural county, which means that you could go, there could be a mile or 2 miles between homes out in the county. So what you're talking about is running those buses to try and pick up rural kids out in the country to get them into Hillsboro, because the schools are where there's water and sewer. You have to have water and sewer to run a school. Can't be on well and septic. So you're bringing all these kids from the north and from the west, and you're bringing them into where the populated areas are. It's just not going to happen.
It doesn't make sense.
You can't even figure that out. I feel for the school boards right now and Dr. Felder and Dr. Cosby. I mean, I think they're doing an amazing job. I really feel for them, and what they're trying to navigate is just so difficult. Uncharted solutions. Uncharted, but no good solutions.
Uncharted.
No good solutions. So,
Right. So it's a dump truck of lemons, and we have to figure out how to get some lemonade before all those lemons go bad.
That's right.
You know,
right. That's very true.
You know, it's maybe not going to be as much lemonade as we're used to getting from a dump truck of lemons.
Yeah.
But you know, great innovation. I'm a conspicuous optimist when it comes to this kind of thing specifically. I think that great innovations can come from this if we can free ourselves enough to think of them and
right.
to say, what could possibly work with the conditions that we do have if we had to invent a school system? What would we do? I mean, if you want to really blow some money, let's get everybody the high-speed internet out in the county.
Right. Right.
And they are doing some things with hotspots, which is great, but
that's a band-aid. Expensive band-aid.
It is. People should have listened to Penny Rich years ago, who was
years
saying
ago when I said
this
that.
Needs
yep.
to be a utility. So we'll come back. Penny's drinking a beverage so that she
Thank
can
you.
Remain calm at all times, like I am. And we're gonna keep talking to Penny Rich until she just hangs up the phone. And you're listening to the Weekend Water Cooler on 97.9 The Hill. Don't go away. We'll be right back. And we're back with Penny Rich. And you know, Penny, my favorite topic that I talk to you about every time I talk to you, I never get tired of talking about this, and we'll be talking about it right through November, December, January. And, you know, I want to talk about this all the time, is voting. Mm-hmm. Voting, voting, voting. Now, as you know, our current president has been making a game out of putting out misinformation about voting by mail, talking about voting by mail and absentee voting as if they're not the same thing. They are the same thing.
Absolutely.
And they are the same thing. And I don't know if you saw the wonderful interview that Jonathan Swan did with him, but Jonathan Swan pushed back on him, I thought, very well a couple or three times, when the president tried to advance this false argument that the government in some states were going to just massively mail out ballots unsolicited. And Jonathan Swan interrupted him repeatedly. I just love watching anybody interrupt him.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter what the topic is.
Right.
But he was really good at it. And he said, well, no, applications.
Right.
They're mailing out applications for absentee ballots. The president's claim, for example, is that a veteran who had died had received a ballot, and how awful this was, and that this was a representation of how somebody could vote for this person who is deceased. Well, that certainly is not true. That person may have received an application for an absentee ballot, which would be common for someone who is in the service, by the way. A number of states are just mailing out applications unsolicited to make it easier and quicker for people to apply for an absentee ballot. So that's what we do in North Carolina and in Orange County. It's a very, very simple process to request an absentee ballot. I have mailed in my request. I assume that you have as well.
I have, yes.
Even though you are the highest elected official in the Orange County government, you realize that circumstances could change. There could be a dozen reasons why you
Right.
can't get to the polls. If the level of COVID infection in the community is much higher in October, for example, October 15th, not that I'm counting the minutes, but I am, is when early voting starts. Certainly it would be my preference to go to the Seymour Center, as I have many, many times now, and vote in person, do my early voting, which incidentally, folks, is also an absentee ballot. Technically,
right. Exactly.
That's what you're doing. You're just filling it out and having them put it in the counting machine in person. But technically, yes, it's an absentee ballot. How do you know that? Well, let's just get into this one little piece of minutia. There's a unique number on my ballot when I vote. That's one of the only things that I feel like, that means that they can trace that back to my name, and hypothetically, in the hypothetically, they could trace how I voted. So you are making that one technical leap of faith that your anonymity is not what it might be. But the point is, the ballot has a unique identifier on it. It is, these are carefully tracked. You cannot easily replicate an absentee ballot. It is, you know, mailed to you. When you return it, you have to sign a statement that this is your ballot. You have to have a witness. Is that correct?
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. You used to have two. Now it's down to one. Yes.
Now it's just one. And
right.
And it can be your spouse or a family member.
Right.
It doesn't
right.
have to be a notary public. You don't
it
have to
not.
Spend any money, any of that. And then you just mail it back. And if you're worried about all the shenanigans with the Postal Service, and many of us are, you can bring it to the Board of Elections and hand it to them, correct?
That's right. That's right.
And are they going to put, do you know if they're going to put boxes out, like that are going to be drop-off boxes?
I'm not sure of that yet. We are talking about all different options with Rachel Raper, who is in charge. And then, of course, the Board of Elections also has their own board of directors as well. So
right.
they're the ones that create early voting sites and early voting dates. So we're in the process of this. And, you know, luckily in Orange County, we did make room and have a little bit more in our budget, knowing that we might get into this circumstance of
right.
or absentee voting. We're trying to, what you're saying is a good thing. We're trying to leave all the options open to make
right.
it as easy as possible for people to vote. That's a good idea to have some sort of box or something. But I could tell you, my sons have done absentee by mail voting every single time.
Right.
I don't think they've ever voted in person. I shouldn't say that. I think maybe one of my sons has, but they're almost always, because they were in college, right? One
right.
was in App State and one was in UNCG, but they considered Carver their home. So they did absentee voting, and they wanted to vote for their mom. So, you know, that was important to them, right? And I thank them for that. Not a problem. We just had a recount and went and to do a provisional voting. And I was there for the entire thing. And I have to tell you, it's a clean system. There is nothing wrong with the system of absentee voting at all. I mean, it
right.
really is very, very clean and safe. And I can't talk for other counties, but in Orange County, your vote is safe. If you want to do an absentee ballot, your vote is absolutely safe. But at the same time, you know, you've got to request the absentee ballot,
right?
What you just talked about, with a form to fill out. You can go to the Orange County website and find that. You know, you just go into government and elections and you can find that.
Right.
And you do need to, let's see, we talked about a date. You need to get that request in by 5 p.m. on Tuesday, October 27th. So that request to get that it's an, and then that form is, you could just print it right off of the website. So that form has to be into
right.
Where it's telling you to mail it to by that date for you to get your absentee ballot. And then you and I were talking to each other before the show came on. Those absentee ballots in North Carolina are going to come to you like right after Labor Day in September.
Right.
Early
so you
September.
Put you put your request in. You've already requested yours. I've requested mine.
Yeah.
But I won't get it until, I think it's September 6th, when North Carolina starts mailing out the actual ballot.
Right.
That we will use to vote in the November elections.
Right.
North Carolina is one of the I think the first state in the country, the earliest to mail their to actually put their ballots in the mail. So that, in my opinion, in my tiny opinion, that's going to be a very interesting test of whether or not we need to have any concerns about the mail. How long is it going to take to get from the Orange County Board of Elections in Hillsborough to my house on the north side of Chapel Hill? Is it going to take, because I know what day they're sending them out, will it take one day? Will it take a week? Am I going to wait until the day, but even though I can wait literally until election day
right.
to mail it, I should then, I think, go have my head examined, but
You didn't make up your mind by now.
you can actually mail it up to Election Day as long as it's postmarked by Election Day and received within 3 days of Election Day. It will be counted. Now, I just can't imagine why you would do that.
Right.
Should probably mail it as soon as early voting starts, just to make absolutely sure that it's received by Election Day. But it's going to take longer to count votes this year.
It will.
You know, people are probably perfectly fine with that. I just don't see anybody getting their knickers in a twist about that.
I don't either. You know, it's in November, I think we're still going to be pretty much not in a lockdown, but we're going to be staying home and, staying alive. And so,
songs.
All right. If it takes an extra day or so to get the results, that's fine. Luckily, I think that there is such rage in this country because we have absolutely no plan to make people, to help people heal and stop the spread of this horrible virus. There is no federal plan right now.
Right.
I think people are beginning to get really enraged about this. So hopefully the folks that the votes that count get counted first will be a clear indication. And we, even though the absentee votes and mail-in votes will have to be a big part of the count, we'll get an indication on election night.
That's right. Well, I think we'll know before election night, actually, because I think that a couple of days before election day, we'll start knowing what the numbers are in early voting, what the turnout numbers are
in early
voting, and to some extent, with absentee ballots, we'll certainly know what they are compared to 4 years ago. And
sure.
I think those are going to be some really amazing numbers.
Yeah. We're amazing. Up in Orange County a lot already. I can tell you that. I've asked for a number count, and of course it changes daily, but we're way, way up from 2016.
Okay. Well, okay. That's really good. That gives me a big smile and a happy feeling. So on that happy note, we're going to take another break, and we're going to talk. We're going to wrap up with what's your name again? Yeah, with Penny Rich.
Me.
What's my name? We're talking about elections and government, and we have a few closing remarks to share with you. You're listening to the Weekend Water Cooler on 97.9 The Hill. Don't go away. We'll be right back. Back, and we have about 6 minutes left, and I just wanted to take a moment and mention the passing of our good friend Donna Baker, the clerk for Orange County. And you know, I worked with Donna some as a person on a volunteer advisory board for the commissioners, and you can't operate the government without a person like this. She worked very hard. It's just very easy to get along with. She's a problem solver.
Right.
And, you know, that's going out of style in some ways in the government, I guess, at some levels anyway. And there are so many people like this who work for our local government. They make the trains run on time, Penny. And I know that you know that you couldn't be anywhere near as effective in your job as you are. Without the staff like this who you know, you say jump and they say how high, basically. But you know, tell me about your working experience with Donna Baker. And I know this had to be a shock for everybody.
A
terrible thing to have lost her.
Yeah, it's hard to talk about her in the past tense. I mean, it's only been a couple of days, so it's all just kind of settling in. But that's a great tribute because so many people are public servants in our community.
Exactly.
The county has over 1,000 people that work for it. And you're right. The county commissioners sit at behind the desk and create policy, but without the footwork of these folks that are behind the scenes, nothing would ever get done. The clerk's position is interesting because they work directly for the county anyway. They work directly for the county commissioners in the towns. The clerk is appointed by the manager, but in the county, the clerk is appointed by the county commissioners. And so, you know, that was her job to make every county commissioner shine. And if you didn't shine, if you didn't know what you were doing all the time, and if you weren't on top of things, she personally took that as a failure for herself, not you, but herself. So, you know, her time spent with commissioners and making sure that we got what we needed and information and, you know, just more than anyone could ever imagine what she has done for us. As the chair, your clerk is basically your right hand. And it's more than just the daily phone calls to remind you where you need to be and what you're doing and where your meetings are. It's you know, you get to know each other pretty well because you're talking to each other at like right. 7 o'clock in the morning. And I'm like, oh, did you just wake up? Yeah, I'm going to go for a walk. I wanted to catch you before you did this. And you know, don't forget to do this. So there's a whole lot of business being taken care of, but then there's a whole lot of like, you know, your personal, like, okay, so I could do this. I could do that. So Donna was a super clerk. She was someone that besides being so good at her job, for 20 years in Orange County, she was generally a just such genuine. I mean, it doesn't happen that there's such nice people like Donna in this world.
Right.
And I mean, she just, everyone, she gave the same attention to. You're talking about a boards and commission. You might have worked with her there. She gave everyone 100% of what they needed all the time.
Right.
And so she will, I'm sorry, she would dearly be missed, you know.
As a volunteer who worked with her,
right?
I was the board that I was on. I was on that board for 10 years, and as you might expect, over that course of time, the occasion did arise when I would miss a deadline. Okay, I would get a little quick email from Donna saying, "You know, we needed to have this yesterday,"
right?
And it would never be, Gene, you screwed up. You know, it would be like, is there anything you need?
Yeah.
That
how can
you
we
don't
help
have?
You get this?
That I, yeah. How can I help you?
Yeah.
You
know, yeah.
We need to get this. It was always we. I guess that's the bottom line is that.
Right. Right.
You know,
it's, she came, it came from the heart. Yeah. It came from the heart. So she's really, really going to be missed. I mean, you know, we're not in session right now, so we're not getting the full impact of it. Sure. We go back on September 1st and.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad because that'll give you some time.
Yeah, well, we have a little bit of breathing time to figure out what our next move is. I have to talk to the board on September 1st. We'll probably have a closed session to talk about it. And it's a personnel issue, so we can't talk about it in open
right.
session or
right.
in public.
Right.
So that's all I can give you is that we will be discussing it on September 1st.
Yeah.
And, you know, she's going to be hard to replace. And again, I am just so grateful that I had 8 years to spend with her and learn from her and grow. And, you know, I feel bad for the next round of commissioners that are coming on because they won't have had that experience, but
yeah.
they won't know that experience either that they would,
right.
that they're missing.
Right.
But I can tell you that she is just going to be dearly, dearly missed by everybody.
Yeah. I mean, I appreciate that. I appreciate her. You know, just being one of these people that, you know, I hope we can kind of, as a country, even just try to remember what this felt like, that you had people who were not in any of this for the politics. They just want to serve the community.
Oh,
they want
to,
you know, they want to make a living and they want to help their fellow citizens and serve. And I think, and I hope that that's going to come back into fashion and that we can remember what that sort of apolitical perspective is, that whoever is a commissioner, I'm sure that that Donna served Republicans and Democrats alike with equal dedication. So
that didn't matter to her. It didn't matter. And even like talking with the public, she didn't care what your political beliefs were.
No,
if
right,
you needed to get
right.
something done, she would get it done. I mean, that's just the way it was. So
So we all need to reward that wherever we see it.
Absolutely.
I appreciate you talking to me about that. And of course, we're wildly over our time constraint here. So we'll have to say farewell. Right? when we get a 90-minute show, we'll be fine.
There we go.
We'll run over that time too.
Right.
Penny
right.
Rich, it's always a joy to talk to you. I wish you a happy, cool evening walk one day soon.
Yeah.
It could happen. It could happen. Really happen.
I'm looking really forward happen. To that. Yeah.
All absolutely. Right. Everybody try to stay cool, stay calm, and stick together. That's what we're here to do.
That's
here in the Weekend Water Cooler. Everybody go out and have a great weekend.
Follow Gene on Twitter at Gene Bolduc and tweet your comments and questions with the hashtag WCHL.